So, what do you think of backward design? Damn, it's a hell of a lot of work, isn't it? Remember, this is going to be full of honesty. It's a pain in the butt. You're supposed to front end all of that stuff. You're supposed to guess all of that. Obviously, it's going to go hard and not particularly well the first time you teach something. The idea is give it a shot. So, what do you think? I let you off the hook. You can say those things now. What do you think?
It's thorough.
Do you know historically why it has a bad rap?
Because it's a lot of work.
Well, yes, but nobody wants to say that out loud. And so we have to have some reason to denigrate it besides, oh my God, this is going to make me work and think. And it goes back to a phrase that you've probably heard but might not know the genesis of, which is teaching to the test. Which sounds like an awful thing. And then here's backwards design where I'm supposed to be teaching to the test. Well, here's where the phrase comes from and why we're in a different situation. Back when standardized testing was just getting a start, the people who were doing standardized testing were testing experts. They were psychometricians, achievement measurement psychometricians. And they knew something really important, that you do a better job measuring fewer things with more items than spending that same number of items trying to measure more things. And so they had to make choices about what of the curriculum was going to be covered on the standardized test. You with me? So they would just pick certain parts. The intent was not to pick the most important parts. If anything, the intent was to predict, or was to select the most predictive parts. What parts, if you know this, presage that you know the rest of it, presages you're going to be able to learn more stuff later. Make sense? Very different than the topically most important stuff. So, people whose kids got their butts handed to them on the first couple of years of standardized testing started getting copies of the tests, figuring out what was going to be tested on the standardized test, and teaching to the test. Which would have been fine if the tests had been complete, right? Because if you're teaching to a complete test, how can that be a problem, right? Or if they had really covered the most valuable information, the most important information, as determined by the people who were going to teach them later courses. But what happened was they were teaching to the parts of the test which were they had never checked with the college teachers what they thought was important, or professional historians what they thought was important, or professional mathematicians what they thought was important. See the problem? They're teaching to a test that is not a particularly good test for assessing whether you know the good stuff or not. And so teaching to the test led to an increase in standardized test scores and a decrease in freshman and sophomore college performance. But we're not going to be doing that kind of teaching to the test. Because remember, the part of teaching or the backwards design is you try and figure out what you want them to learn and what you're going to consider as learning of that. At which point, one may ask, why not focus on teaching that? Make sense? So talk to me. Tell me what you're thinking about backwards design.
Well, you need to know the goals of the whole teaching program and how it fits into the next progression or where they're
cool.
coming from. Or
and that's what I refer to as the curricular role of the course. Is this a foundation course? Is this a content course? Is this a cut course? What topics... is this the only place they're going to get, which might make those topics really important? Or what topics are other people going to try and build on, which might make those topics really important? And it ends up not helping because everything is potentially important somewhere. And you're back to, I don't know what I'm going to do. Which is not the only whining we're going to do this while we're together. There's never enough time to teach everything you wish you could teach in a course. And even if there were, there's this badgering from Shaughnessy that there's other things we should be teaching besides the content of the course. All right, somebody else say something.
I like the idea that you should center in the fact that what you teach needs to be valuable in the long term.
Okay.
Because there is this phrase there that whatever content you teach in the mentor is supposed to be something that makes that the child learning then will make him or her a better adult. And in this case, what we will be teaching is for helping them be good professionals, whatever they are. So they will look back at what you did, and then, you know, you help them build the structure to do things. So, but have that, like being conscious of that, I think it's the important.
I agree. The way that I introduce 350, this is weird. Usually I have at least one person in the group that had 350, and they can be helpful because they give me that other perspective. But I introduce 350 as you're going to learn the common sense of psychology. That everybody who does psychology, everyone who calls themselves a psychologist or does what they call psychology, this is their bedrock. This is their common sense. This is where information comes from. This is how we decide whether information is any good. And it's interesting because, you know, that's not the way they're thinking. Nobody signs up for to be a psych major and says, oh, I can't wait for the stats class. We did polls at 20 different large universities where we asked people what they thought were the elements of the major they were signing up for. And less than 5% of the people who were signing up for psychology mentioned stats, methods, or research in any way. To these little darlings, psychology is abnormal psychology, followed by clinical psychology, because once we know there's wackos out there, we probably should do something for them. Followed by educational psychology, which is typically in another building, sometimes in another campus. And then whatever they got from their high school teacher, which varies dramatically. And so one of our challenges in teaching this course is that sometimes it's the only required course it's only been recently that we have any required courses in our psych major. We now have these four core 200-level courses that people had to take. But before then, there was nothing you had to take. You didn't even have to take intro because you could AP your intro course in. And so it's the only required course in the discipline that they don't think is part of the discipline. You got some selling to do. I mean, it's a lot easier in the graduate classes. If nothing else, you've resigned yourself to statistics. You might not have embraced it yet. But it's like, oh, fuck, I got to do this. I lived through it once. This guy doesn't look like a bigger son of a bitch than the last one. I should be fine. So how do you decide? You got it started. How are you going to decide what you want them to get out of the class? Come on, you're going to teach this class. What's the easiest thing to do?
Set a goal or proficiency.
Long before that. Way easier than that. Where do you start? Quit raising your hand.
Picking up those few nuggets of information that you want them to carry with them.
Easier than that.
What models you want them to learn?
Easier.
Call self-tractives.
Pick up a book. Pick up a stats book. Pick up a methods book. you're going to struggle with being able to call up all the stuff that you think is important. Okay? If I had you sit down and make a list of what you think is important, and then I had you make that a list up every 3 weeks, by the end of about 6 months, you'd have a pretty good list. But you'd still be adding stuff to it, because we're just not good at that task. But we're really good at looking at a list and deciding what things on that list we care about and what things we don't care about. Pick up a textbook. Yeah, I have no problem with textbooks. People think I don't like textbooks. I have a hard time having somebody buy a $300 book that we only read a third of. If you want to go buy that $300 book, I'll give you a list of really good books. But that, Ed, books are all written from a perspective, whereas the people that gather into my classes don't come from any one perspective. And so in 941, we had people reading out of, as far as I could tell, 7 or 8 different ANOVA texts, because they got an ANOVA text for comm studies and an ANOVA text from political science and an ANOVA text, and everybody's reading in their native language, if you will. But that's the first suggestion for where we start this. Why, is there a way to make this stay on longer? Is you're going to have a difficult time generating that list. So don't. Find somebody else's list and go down through it and decide what things you really care about and what things you don't really care about. Okay? I'm telling you, that will make your job easier. Room 230, the other room down there that has computers in it, the combination is 1 and 3, followed by a 2, followed by a 4. If you go in there, there's like 3 or 4 shelves of stats and methods books. Borrow whatever you want, bring it back whenever you want. You're getting awful close to the point where you'll be able to call an editor and get your own desk copies of things. Okay? But that's my suggestion to you. Don't sit and think real hard. Sit and evaluate real hard. Get other people's books. Look at a couple of them. You'll find that there's different flows, there's different orders for things. There's all kinds of ways of doing ordering and sequencing and preference besides what you've had, no matter what you've had. Yeah.
So for college teaching, do most departments already have suggestions for textbook for professors or?
No, you've a stats class, more than a methods class, but a stats class, there might have been some agreement before you got there that everybody would use the same book. But it's not, I've never found it to be firm enough that it matters. I mean, what you got to remember is that if you want to teach stats and methods, you are probably not going to run into a lot of complaint from your colleagues if you want to teach the stats and the methods courses. Because that's usually the last thing assigned. People just don't want to. I cannot tell you how many faculty we have hired in the last 31 years that said, I'm all about teaching methods and stats. I can't wait. Me and 2 other folks have taught it during that time. People just don't want to. People would rather keep up on their content area, which is also keeping up on their research. I finally went the other way and started researching what I was teaching instead of teaching what I was researching. I used to be a cognitive psychologist. I kind of liked it. But I found out that the only way that I could put the investment into my teaching that I wanted was to have that be my research source. Kind of fun. All right. So, is anybody, this is a tough question to ask in public, but it won't be the first one or the last one. Is anybody balking about the idea of research design? Does it offend anybody? Does it seem like a bad idea? Okay. Because I have had whole rooms of veteran teachers say, this is crazy. I know, and this is the next thing, I know what I want them to learn. I really believe that I can put together some lectures, and at the end of 5 or 6 weeks that I can sit down and I will have discovered that I have presented a coherent package of information, that it's relatively simple to decide how I want to evaluate it. It's crazy. And so they don't want to do the front end, even if they have a course to start with, even if they have tests to look at. Now, the simplest form of backwards design that I know, and the one that I use all the time, is you look at that test and you see what they didn't do well on and what you're going to change next time so that they do well on that part. Do you see that as a kind of backwards design? It's not the full glory of the article, but that's the idea. Here's something that I'm going to point my teaching at my students' success on that thing. There used to be only 12 pink things. And when we first introduced that first set of... Do you know what pink things are? Oh, okay. Sorry. In all of the courses... Yeah, there's all of these. Okay. Those are all online exercises. Okay, there's a gazillion of them. And so, for example, on this one, I tell you a story. I tell you, a little bitty story about a study. And then you have to tell me the IV, the DV, whether other variables are controls or confounds. Okay, it's pretty much all vocabulary push. Okay? But there used to be 12 of them. And when we introduced the 12 of them, we basically did away with D's in 350.
350 is the undergrad.
Yeah, 350 is the research methods design analysis course that all of our middle-sized kids take. And I built 12 of them based on things that weren't going well on the exams and in lab. And since then, now we have 114 of them. And each of the other ones was built because of a particular part of a test or a lab assignment that didn't go well.
But that means you're in the backward design, you already have the test.
Yes! And I'm saying that after you teach that first time,
so
right?
You screw up the first time.
Pretty much. You pick a book. You do the very best you can. You plan ahead as much as you can, but you are basically running a pilot study. It's qualitative research, and it's
because
and
they
it's
won't fire you,
shoot you. Nobody's going to fire you. You've got a year-long contract. They might shoot you at midterm, the kidsman. But keep in mind that there's a reason that book has done well. There's a reason that that curriculum is a fairly standard curriculum. It's not a crappy place to start. It's just that I believe we can do better. And so, like I say, that's the simplest form of backwards design that I know, is fix the thing that offends you most. Thinking about the... Okay, so let's try this. Let's